This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back in, everybody. Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, continues live from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studio. Ben Wilson with you as we flip the calendar into June here on a Sunday night. Big thanks as well to our producer, Adam Bernard. Got Johnny Campbell, Jaron Zabara, Alexis Crow, Chris Foster behind the glass here at Circa. Chris, a sweat going on right now of the LSU Tigers, who were big favorites, but he's got him in a little parlay. I'm rooting on Chris, even though I kind of want to see as much chaos and upsets happen as much as possible in the college baseball postseason. LSU down a couple runs there going in to the sixth inning against number 4 seed Arkansas Little Rock. We'll have more college baseball talk coming up in 15 minutes. Excited to get Zach Rieger on from the Sports Betting Dime. Zach has been following the college baseball postseason very closely. Got some thoughts on the updated futures board as well. And we're about to get into some of the French Open recap, what happened today. And Scott Reichel, Reichel Radio, Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Scott Reichel going to join us. He has a bunch of plays loaded up, which I love when we have guests who come on the show and are just immediately ready to fire. Bunch of French Open plays for Monday. Get ready for that 5 a.m. Eastern time as those get underway. I have a few plays myself, all on the women's side. A lot of big chalk, but there's oftentimes interesting certain ways and props that you can play, derivatives that are very good value bets once we get into this second half of the tournament. So excited to get Scott's take on what to expect for the second week of the French Open. A big story today, by far, was Iga Świątek, the huge come-from-behind win. She drops the opening set 6-1 to Elena Rybakina. Looked to be run off the clay, and this is a woman, Iga Świątek, who has been the queen of clay for the last several years, but by far coming into her worst form at any point in this French Open. Just to put in perspective here how much Iga Świątek had been struggling, usually when she was at her top form a couple years ago, when she was just untouchable on the surface, a good measure is to look at a player's service points won plus return points won on a specific surface, you know, over a 52-week span. Gets you a really good sample size per surface. And if you're at about 110% combined serve points won and return points won, that is as elite as it gets. Świątek was in the 113 range, which is just nuclear. I mean, that's on the same level, if not better, than peak Serena Williams when she was at the absolute forefront of her prime. Even like a Rafa Nadal, it's pretty much equivalent to what Nadal did for all those years on clay. The big question, though, coming into the 2025 French Open, Świątek was co-favorites with Aryna Sabalenka, and as the number 5 seed, by far got the toughest draw in a brutal quarter with some unbelievably talented players. We're going to talk about that in a little bit because her next opponent in the fourth round is not easy either, coming up here in what we'll see in Elena Svitolina, the Ukrainian. But Świątek goes from 113, last year dipped. It was still really solid. It was in the 109 range. It was still somebody who was able to get through the French Open, takes on Jasmine Paolini, the Italian, in the final. Well, this year that number was more like 106 on the serve points and return points won. A lot of it is we've potentially seen some mental cracks from Świątek. There's been coaching changes. You've also seen with that now no longer just, you know, impassable ability on clay, you've seen players come at Iga and view that match and that potential situation like they've actually got a puncher's chance. Now, so far, nobody's actually been able to drain Iga. And as we look at the updated French Open futures, Świątek, in a lot of respects, has moved to the favorite over Aryna Sabalenka. Sabalenka, who's looked very solid in her own right here. Świątek, 2-1. I'm seeing Sabalenka in the plus 220 range. Mira Andreeva, about 5.5-1. It reminds me, though, of some of the years where Rafa Nadal on the men's side, and that's the fairest comp. There were years where Rafa came into the French Open, banged up, out of form. In the era of the big three, especially, you wondered, and really going back to the days of the big four when it was Nadal, Federer, Djokovic, Andy Murray, where you wondered, okay, is this the year where Rafa gets beat on clay? And no matter what, it seemed like time and again, even when he was toward the back nine of his career and Carlos Alcaraz was first favored to win a French Open, even then, Nadal has always had an ability to get the most out of his game when nobody was expecting it, just because of the pedigree, the familiarity with the courts on Philippe Chatrier and Suzanne Longland, and his ability to create great angles with his just effortless court movement. We're seeing a lot of the same things with Świątek Having said that, the strength of the women's draw, just the toughness of the side of the draw and the quarter specifically she's in, I still believe this to be a really, really difficult runs for Swiatek. And I would still take, if you're giving me odds on who will advance further, Sabalenka or Swiatek, and they're priced evenly right now, I would still be taking Aryna Sabalenka as somebody who has really come into her own and shed the narrative that she's simply just a hard court or grass court type serve and power type player. She's shown a tremendous amount of finesse, especially now that she's gotten rid of the yips that really plagued Sabalenka for years earlier in her career and kept her from being a dominant force, especially on this surface there at Roland Garros. So Swiatek, the big winner, comes back in three sets. She'll take on the Ukrainian Elena Svitolina, who I do like. I already played Svitolina plus 4.5 games. Talk about all my plays a little bit later in the show, but you can get Svitolina plus 4.5 games, who just beat last year's finalist Jasmine Paolini. Svitolina been absolutely elite in both holds and returns a serve. We'll get into more of the specifics a little bit later in the show, but Svitolina been incredible. First serve percentage, second serve percentage, there really hasn't even been a drop. So she's been very lethal on serve so far. I like her to really push Swiatek. Even if this is a 6-4, 6-4 type of match that Swiatek wins tightly, you still win your bet. So I'll take Svitolina, who's a pretty healthy dog, seeing her plus 290 right now, as far as Swiatek, who is minus 360. But Svitolina over the last year actually has better clay court numbers, as do a few players on tour, compared to Iga Swiatek. That's the first of the plays I'll have. That'll actually be for Tuesday in the quarterfinals. We'll give out a couple plays here for the women's round of 16 bottom half coming up tomorrow. There's a lot of chalk, though, a lot of big money favorites. It gets tough at this time of the tournament when you have so many of those. It'll be interesting to see how we can try to find either some in-game, in-match angles, or some other derivatives to bet on. I think there are some, especially in the Coco Gauff match against Ekaterina Alexandrova, which we'll talk about. That's one of those early 5 a.m. Eastern time starts coming up on Monday as the round of 16 wraps up bottom half of the women's draw. Then we'll have both the men and women in action. Going to be an awesome quarterfinal Tuesday as well. And Scott Reichel will join us in about a half hour to give his take on the Monday card there in the French Open. Let's switch gears a little bit, though. We had all of the non-team sports today. We had the golf, the tennis, and in the golf, if you bet Scottie Scheffler at any point, and people may be made fun of you for taking such a short price on a favorite, Scheffler was about plus 275 pre-tournament. It didn't matter. At Jack's Place at the Memorial in Dublin, Ohio, Scheffler, who actually coming into round three was several shots back of the 36-hole leader Ben Griffin, you could have got Scheffler in the plus 175 range. Scheffler goes out and continues his dominance. This is now three wins in the last 4 weeks. Scheffler, the last seven tournaments, has finished no worse than eighth, and he wins yet another title. Hard to believe, his first signature event of the season for Scheffler, and the early struggles coming back from the hand injury and the cut that he had in the offseason, certainly a thing of the past. We take a look now at the updated U.S. Open futures here, which will be in 2 weeks' time at Oakmont, a place that Scottie Scheffler has never played at. Scheffler's odds, if you thought they couldn't get any lower, they're about 3-1 heading into this week at the Memorial. They've managed to drop a little bit, updating my odds screen here, sitting now plus 280 for Scottie Scheffler. Rory McIlroy plus 650 is your second favorite. Bryson DeChambeau, defending U.S. Open champ, who took out Rory in what was an incredible collapse by McIlroy and an incredible comeback by DeChambeau last year at Pinehurst, number two. DeChambeau, your third favorite at 9-1. Jon Rahm, who's been in really good form on LIV Golf, at 12-1, and then Xander Schauffele, 18-1. But before we get into the U.S. Open odds, I just wanted to point out, since May 2nd, guys, Scottie Scheffler has three tournament wins. The Colorado Rockies have won three Major League Baseball games. Just let that sink in for a moment, okay? It's Colorado Rockies. Congratulations, Colorado. You've somehow found a way to eclipse yet another embarrassing statistic. Three wins in 30 days for the Rockies. Three wins in 30 days for Scottie Scheffler on the PGA Tour. So as I've looked here into Oakmont, I think the biggest thing you can look at and maybe try to say, okay, why wouldn't you bet Scheffler? And I'm never somebody who's going to bet anybody who is sub 5-1 as a favorite in a golf tournament. It's honestly a situation where Scheffler is such a good closer. He has at times not necessarily gotten off to the best of starts. He's not someone who usually goes wire to wire. Even if his odds dip a little bit, I'd argue it's much better value, let's say, to add Scheffler in pocket. Let's say he's 2-1, three shots back after round one, or like we just saw this week, plus 175, four shots back after round two. The longer the tournament goes on, those are the moments where Scheffler shines the most in these. I'd much rather wait and do that. When you kind of get the short runway theory going, you eliminate a lot of other possibilities. There's going to be unexpected golfers in the mix who you expect to fade as the week goes on. That happened this week at the Memorial. Guys were unable to sustain, as we saw with Ben Griffin, who had the 65 on Thursday, never broke 70 the rest of the tournament, despite being in great form himself, coming off a win the previous week on tour. That's, to me, the way you play Scheffler at this point. And it's not sexy anytime you're giving out golf picks that are in the plus 150 to 2-1 range, but that is how you do it. And if I'd much rather go that strategy than putting him in pre-tournament saying, well, screw it, let me just take the plus 280. And he has an off week because he's not going to win every week. And this is a place he's never played. You know the rough will be long. We've seen Scheffler struggle a little bit at times with that QI10 driver that gets him into trouble. And he struggled with it early today in Dublin. Didn't matter. He was able to scramble and ultimately find his footing. That's the one thing I would look at, though, with Scheffler. If you see him navigate and stay in the mix after the first two rounds, that's when I would add him. The McIlroy story is interesting because he really struggled with his allegedly non-conforming driver. Remember that at Quail Hollow at the PGA. McIlroy is the second favorite at plus 650. All accounts are, you know, he certainly enjoyed his Masters win back in April. He's been a little out of form and, to be frank, out of sight, out of mind since. I would not be touching McIlroy as that second favorite in the U.S. Open. When we return, excited to talk some more college baseball, get our breakdowns with Zach Rieger as Cashing Out rolls on here from VSiN.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's Cashing Out past midnight Eastern, but still a lot going on, especially in the college baseball world. Regional weekend, we're waiting to see if we get any more winner-take-all Monday regional final games going on. Ben Wilson back with you from downtown Las Vegas. You see behind me on the screens, we've got all the games going. LSU still down 6-4 to the 4-seed Arkansas Little Rock. They were 100-1 to win the regional. And Little Rock is 6 outs away. LSU, by the way, now plus 105 on the live line as it stands. Arkansas Little Rock 18-1 pregame. As we go out to our progressive guest line, talk a little more college baseball. Great to welcome in Zach Rieger. Does outstanding work for the Sports Betting Dime, host and analyst there. You follow him at Zach Rieger 18. You're smiling right now. You definitely had an 18-1 Arkansas Little Rock ticket, right? Don't lie.
I really wish. You know, looking back, seems like that would have been the smart move, but the way LSU was playing, there's no way. Anyone, you just know someone has a ticket somewhere, but there's no way you could actually think to put a ticket on Little Rock the way that LSU has looked this regional. Just they hadn't even allowed a run in their first two games. Now here comes Little Rock, and you said they're now plus on the live money line. They were still favored, and they just can't bring anyone home. Little Rock is just staying alive. I just saw right before we got on, LSU had a guy on first. The LSU hit a liner to the first baseman, dove to the bag, hit it before the base runner got back. Double play. Little Rock has a little magic right now. Kind of exciting.
Little Rock, baby. Let's go. I'm doing a guest spot tomorrow morning on a numbers game, and Matt Brown, who's a former LSU pitcher, is filling in for Gil Alexander. And I want nothing more, Zach, than to be able to come on that show. Because he loves to just flaunt, you know, the LSU baseball thing. And I'm like, I so want you guys to lose to Little Rock. It would be hilarious. But look, it also has implications here. As much as it would be absolutely stunning for LSU to lose back-to-back games, that's what would have to happen for them to not reach the Super Regionals. LSU became, with all this carnage that's gone on over the weekend, Zach, the overall College World Series favorite. Them and Arkansas, the two biggest favorites to reach their respective super regionals and take care of business. Looks like Arkansas is well on the way to doing that. They're about to close it out against Creighton down in Fayetteville. Where do you stand, though, on the top of the board now that so many big-name teams, starting with Vanderbilt, the number one overall seed, Texas, who was ranked number one late in the year, a lot of big, big names going down. How do you look at the board at this point now that we're getting down here into nearly the final 16? Still waiting on. It'll get Zach's audio here fixed in a moment. Don't have Zach right now. That was about to be the best answer ever, I'm sure, from Zach. So we'll let have the guys let me know when we got Zach ready to go. But again, when you have teams that were such big minus money, just running down some of the minus money favorites that did not take care of business in the regional: Vandy -400, Texas -225. I mean, these are teams that lost that were not particularly close. Oregon -200, and they went loss. It was a horrible showing for the Ducks in pretty controversial fashion. So, all right, we got Zach back. What do you make of, as we were talking, setting you up here again, with all the big names out, Zach, how do you break down what this current futures board looks like?
So I was talking about LSU. We've already talked about them. They are a team that certainly sticks out, even being down to Little Rock. But then there are two teams that I'm still liking, and I think one of them being Tennessee, who you just brought up, Arkansas. They have a potential super regional matchup now. Of course, they still have to take care of business tomorrow, game 7 against Wake Forest. But if they have that super regional against Arkansas, there's no way they can't be competitive. Tennessee was the favorite to win the College World Series the majority of the year. They were down to as low as, I believe, plus 475 at some point. They're right now looking around plus 800. And I think that is the best number you are going to get on them. So they show some value because they will at least be competitive in that super against Arkansas. But I am still, my pick to win it all, I like this North Carolina team. It's a little risky going against the SEC. Of course, they've won the last 5 College World Series. They've won the last 6 of the last 7. But the ACC has been really strong this year. They headed into the day 5-0 against the SEC in regionals. Of course, the SEC got a few wins, but so did the ACC today. They might just be the most complete team. I like their path to get to Omaha. They will play the winner if they beat Oklahoma in game 7 tomorrow. They will play the winner of Arizona, Cal Poly. Looks like Arizona, at least the last time I saw, Arizona was in control of that game. And they've been to Omaha before. Omaha is a pitcher's ballpark, and they have an incredible trio of starters with Jake Knapp, Jason DeCaro, and Aiden Howe. And then their lineup is strong as well. So with their talent, they're 12-3 in their last 15. The talent, the pitching depth, and just the path to get to Omaha, and as it's shaping up, it might be the easier side of Omaha. There's still a lot to be seen with how the Supers go, but I like North Carolina to win it all, but Tennessee shows a little value just based off the number, and of course, they won it all last year.
And the fact that, as you mentioned, Tennessee and also North Carolina have to win pivotal winner-take-all Game 7s tomorrow night. Zach Rieger, who you can follow at ZachRieger18 from the Sports Betting Dime. Great to give us some time, talk some college baseball betting. And a couple updates here. Arkansas does close it out. They win 8-3 over Creighton, -550 cashes for a Razorback team that has had their issues. It has been far from straightforward for the Razorbacks and Dave Van Horn in past postseasons, but they win 8-3. Louisville, how about the Cardinals, who win 6-0 over the 4-seed Wright State. They take out that, they win that Vanderbilt region as the Commodores were shocked by Wright State, the Raiders, earlier today. So Louisville, 6-1 ticket that cashes on that regional future. We do have, as it stands right now here, Zach, 4 winner-take-all games. Could add a couple more. There's still a few games in progress. We might be, it looks like we're looking down the barrel here at a couple more winner-take-all games. We know 4 right now: Tennessee, Wake Forest, North Carolina, Oklahoma. Those are a couple of 1-2s. Then Southern Miss versus Miami. Southern Miss trying to go 4 straight wins as the 1 seed after being shocked in their opening game. And then you get Ole Miss, Murray State, who will meet for the 3rd time somehow. Murray State pulled off the huge shocker in the first game. Ole Miss has to beat them twice. Ole Miss won earlier 19-8. Of those 4, most likely for an upset or favorite matchup that you think will end up representing some betting value here? No lines out yet, but what do you make of those 4 games for tomorrow?
I think there's going to be some pretty good matchups. I'm excited to see Tennessee and Wake Forest game 7. They're almost looking like Wake Forest again. They had 12 home runs in the first 3 games of the regionals. I believe they hit 3 in their second game. So 15 home runs in 4 games. Very impressive. And they'll be going up against a very strong Tennessee pitching staff. We still don't know who the starter will be. I know Liam Doyle we will probably see at some point. I know Tony Vitello said in his post-game press conference that he was in his ear all game trying to get in to the game tonight. So we'll see the Tennessee pitching staff versus the Wake Forest lineup. Is going to be a very intriguing one. I lean Tennessee in that one, as I talked earlier about the Tennessee future. And I'm curious to see what the line comes out for Southern Miss Miami, because I really like Southern Miss. I'm a little worried it might be a little too juiced to lay just Southern Miss straight up. But this Miami team, I'm not that impressed with, and I love Southern Miss at home in Hattiesburg. It's just one of the most electric atmospheres in college baseball. But Miami's 41st in RPI, don't have much pitching depth, and they went 2-0, but that was thanks to Columbia somehow just playing lights out, exhausting all their resources, all their energy on this huge win to upset Southern Miss in game one. But they only put up 5 runs on Alabama, who I'm also not the biggest on this year. And then, of course, they cruise to a 14-1 victory over the 4-seed Columbia. And then tonight got blown out by Southern Miss. I like them again. Tomorrow, we'll see what the line ends up being. But those are two that stick out to me.
Look, the one for me, I'm fascinated to see how big of a price Ole Miss has to lay. I'm tempted, honestly, in the run line, looking at if you're going to get a big number here on Murray State, the 4-seed. But Ole Miss lost that first game, has won 3 straight since. You give any shot here to the Racers tomorrow? Am I just crazy wanting to drink some OVC Kool-Aid here?
You see, I want to join you in that. And the only reason is that I could see it happening is just, I feel like in this regional, every game, like every team has double digits. Like there are just so many runs being scored in this regional. And if you have a team that just keeps scoring runs, if they just get a stop, a good pitching outing, somehow they can maybe make it work, but it's going to be very hard beat Ole Miss in this one. But they have been scoring runs.
We've seen weird things happen. We hope it happens for a couple more days. Zach Rieger at Zach Rieger 18. Great to have you on, man. Appreciate the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
And a reminder, we have all of our betting splits information available, both from DraftKings at Circa. Right now online, go to VSiN.com/betting splits. Great resource that we have for you. We'll be joined by Scott Reichel to talk some French Open on the other side.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out rolls on from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Sportsbook Studio on a Sunday night. Still college baseball rolling on. This is amazing. Arkansas Little Rock, 18-1 pregame. They are 3 outs away from absolutely stunning LSU and forcing a winner-take-all game 7 against the now tournament favorite. LSU is down 2 runs. They're down to their final 3 outs, and Little Rock has the bases loaded, nobody out in the bottom of the 8th. So we'll continue to keep you posted on that. And let you know as these other regionals are decided, we have 4 games in total still going on as we're deep into the late hours on a Sunday night. I continue to monitor all that. But the upset of the tournament by far going on right now in Baton Rouge is the Little Rock, Arkansas Little Rock, the Spartans, I believe, just add on another run. So 7-4 now, Little Rock in the bottom of the 8th. Talk about more college baseball in a little bit. Let's transition to a sport that gets back underway in about 4.5 hours. Early start, but a great start to the business end of the tournament. French Open, second and final day of the round of 16. Quarterfinals about to be set for Tuesday. It is a great part of the second Grand Slam of the year. And to join us on the Progressive Guest Line, let's go out to Scott Reichel. You follow him at Reichel Radio. Does a great job for the Sports Gambling Podcast Network and hosts the Tennis Betting Podcast for the guys there. So Scott, great to be with you here. I'm curious on the women's side. So we see the Iga Swiatek, the massive comeback today. Odds makers, it seems like they now are back in on Iga after they were apparently out. She's 2-1 to win it all, but still in a really ridiculously tough quarter and tough half in general. What do you make of this women's side now that we've seen Iga avoid a potential huge landmine in Elena Rybakina today?
Well, I also think that she might have been thanking really the tennis draw for giving her Rybakina instead of Ostapenko, because you know how that tends to go when she faces off against Ostapenko. But I liked Iga before the tournament started. I thought the price was insane. I get that her form wasn't exactly that great. She's a multiple-time champion. In order to be the champion, you got to beat the champion, and nobody's really been able to do so for the last couple of years. So I actually found her at 4-1, a pre-tournament. I still like her in general. Yes, the draw's not great. I know Sabalenka is the popular favorite pick because of the draw itself. But Zhang also beat her on clay a couple weeks ago, so that's also not the easiest draw for her, too. But Iga's been solid. Once again, she got pushed to the brink, found a way to win. Saw the same thing last year against Osaka, and she fought off a match point there, eventually did win the tournament. I liked Iga beforehand. I still do. She owns the courts here, so I'm not surprised she's still available in the tournament in the quarterfinal.
It has a lot of that Nadal on clay, even when he was struggling, sort of feel to it. So tough to actually beat the best of the best on that service, and Swiatek has been the case. Well, Mira Andreeva has been another player I think a lot of people really talking themselves into, as this young kind of represents the newest face of tennis. 5-1 right now as it stands, Scott, and she's pretty significant favorite tomorrow morning, -380 against Daria Kasatkina, expected to take care of business. But as we get into this part of the tournament, you tend to still see some lopsided spreads and odds, and we have that especially for Monday. What's an alternative angle, though, you're going to look to back in that Andreeva-Kasatkina match?
So I've actually been diving into the aces market on clay, and I've been going with some unders recently. Think about Andreeva and Kasatkina, both of them really bad at serving. The under 3.5 aces is -124, which you do like quite a bit. Faced off one time before on a hard court, actually, when three sets, zero aces combined. So I think 3.5 is pretty high. Andreeva's had just three aces in her first three matches here combined. And seven straight Kasatkina matches have finished with less than four aces. Neither player's great at serving. I think 3.5 is way too high. I see probably one or two aces tops combined. So I think there's a pretty decent amount of, I'd say, room for error here. Give me the under on the 3.5 combined aces at -120.
Yeah, on the slow molasses-like clay of Roland Garros, Scott, I will never push back on you on an under aces prop. And I mean, Andreeva has been awesome on the return game as well throughout the tournament too. You certainly expect her to hold up that end of the bargain. And yeah, Kasatkina been kind of an all-around finesse player as well. Looking at the rest of the draw here, you also get a couple shock runs to this point. Most people expect them to come to an end. You have Loïs Boisson, what a name on the women's side for the French. But also Hailey Baptiste, the Americans, had an unbelievable run. She takes on Madison Keys. Madison Keys, in a sense, Scott, not known as a great player on the clay, more known as a hard court, grass court player. So what do you make of an interesting matchup where odds are saying Keys big favorite, but can Baptiste keep this thing close?
Yeah, there's an expression, survive in advance. That's what Keys did last match against Kennan, because she was on the ropes, fought off a couple match points, and then got the boomerang break before winning. I like the over in the games. I think it's going to be a tough matchup. Stylistically, both players are pretty similar. Ton of firepower, ton of unforced errors, and I do think you're going to see a pretty entertaining battle between them. A breaker wouldn't shock me in here, which would help out the total. But two of the three career meetings have gone over this number. 20.5, when I can see a breaker, I can see a lot of unforced errors, and maybe even three sets. I like the over in this matchup. I think it'll be close.
Got -360 market-wide for Madison Keys taking on Hailey Baptiste against Scott Reichel, Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Follow him at Reichel Radio, R-E-I-C-H-E-L, joining us here on Cashing Out, talking some French Open. We have the final halves of each round of 16 to go on Monday. And then I'm fascinated, especially on the men's side here. We'll transition there, Scott. You get the fast turnaround for the guys on this particular half of the draw, the top half, to have to turn around. They go immediately into Tuesday. I think about that, especially with Novak Djokovic and where he's at, who's, look, once again, I mean, how many times have we seen Novak over the years look completely out of form, and especially, I should say, in the last, like, year to two, completely out of form, but he's still such a tough out in these Grand Slams. Big favorite tomorrow against Cam Norrie. How much of the match fitness preservation is on your mind as you were looking for an angle here?
Well, I do think that Joker, even though I'm a big Joker guy, I've already mentally accepted the fact that every Grand Slam feels like it's between Sinner and Alcaraz at this point. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping Joker can find a way to get one more across. I'm not sure he's going to, but I do like him in the match taking place against Norrie, because he's owned Norrie in the head-to-head. He's 5-0 lifetime. Did face off about a week ago in Geneva, and you ended up seeing Djokovic win. He did go 2-3 sets to drop one. Did have a match point, though, in the second set breaker before eventually losing that tie break. But he's so good based on his overall form and his overall style of play. Norrie loves to rally, not much firepower. the lack of weapons for Nori, I find, is problematic. And I do think that he's had a relatively favorable draw up to this point. But Joker, I think, is the better player by far. I do think that his game kind of neutralizes all of Nori's weapons. And I think that Joker will outlast him while also serving better over the course of this matchup. I like Djokovic in straight sets. It's about minus 112. Not really a creative pick, but I do think Joker, sure, who has not dropped a set yet, should look sharp once again. Give me him in straight sets again at minus 112.
And look, for Monday, you're picking, especially on the med side, there's not a lot of great options. It's a lot of big-time favorites. I will say it is telling that the market has been steaming Djokovic, who opened about minus 800, 850. He's been blasted all the way up behind me at circa minus 1400. So that tells you people think, yeah, Djokovic is still a giant favorite, probably not giant enough in the one-sided matchup against Cam Nori. The other matchups for Monday, I mean, you're talking Jannik Sinner minus 3,000 in some places against Andrei Rublev, Jack Draper over minus 1,000 against Alexander Bublik, and then the lowest, I should say, of the favorites, Alexander Zverev against the big-serving Dutchman Talon Grigspor. That is minus 725 here for Zverev. So of the other three, you got to get a little creative now that we're into this part of the draw with these lopsided numbers here. Scott, what'd you come up with on a couple of those matches with the wide spreads?
Yeah, so for the Sinner matchup, Sinner, as good as, once again, Oleshko was entering, I'd say, the event or the first couple rounds, yeah, that was pretty easy. Sinner dropped three games in the entire match. I can't really go against Sinner because I do think he is the best player in the world at this point. But you're looking at Rublev, I'll go with his team total under at 11.5 games. He's not looked that great so far in the event. Had a four-set match against Harris, had two tiebreaks against Walton, who's not a good clay player at all, and then had a walkover because Fies had a back fracture. So he had a pretty favorable situation where Fies got hurt, he got a free advancement into the fourth round. Sinner, though, has not dropped a set yet. Each of Sinner's last two opponents have won less than eight games. I know Rublev is a lot better than those two guys, but Sinner's been great in the head-to-head. He's in great form since the comeback from the suspension, and Rublev has not really played anybody worth a damn in the event so far. Mm-hmm. Give me the Rublev team total under 11.5 at minus 110.
I was so ready to just load up on Arthur Fies, and I was unbelievably disappointed to see him pull out with a back injury. Loved his spot against Rublev, and it did not manifest. Plus 190 right now, Sinner in the futures market. Carlos Alcaraz minus 110. Alcaraz just took Sinner to the woodshed in the Italian Open final with a dominant second set. It was a very tight first set. For you, Scott, has Sinner shown you enough now, coming back off the suspension? Form has been very good outside of the Alcaraz match. Shown you enough to warrant a bet here, or is this still Alcaraz's tourney to lose?
I'm always intrigued to bet on Sinner because he never really gets upset by anybody. The only person who actually beaten him in the last year or so is Alcaraz. That's kind of it. But Alcaraz has been surviving. He hasn't really been thriving. He's dropped a set every step of the way, with the exception of the first round match. Shelton probably should have won two sets. I thought he choked away a good opportunity there in the first set on Sunday. Did win the third, did eventually lose in the fourth. But I think that Sinner could potentially outlast him. They won five sets last year. I think it is possible for Sinner to get the job done. Alcaraz is great on clay, but he needs to bump the level up a little bit. I think right now, based on form, Alcaraz has not been as good as I think we all expected. So I actually am going to give Sinner a decent chance to pull this off. I like the value. I'll actually go, sure, with Sinner.
Seems like more of a 55-45 proposition than what it is currently lined at right now. Scott Reichel with us here on Cashing Out. Get yourself a nap, man. We've got like 4 hours till the tennis gets back underway. So thanks so much for doing this here late night on a Sunday.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Give him a follow at Reichel Radio and check out his podcast, the Tennis Gambling Podcast, for the Sports Gambling Podcast Networks, our buddies over there that do great work. Still to come, a lot more updates in the college baseball, MLB world. Also talk some Stanley Cup playoffs in a little bit.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is Cashing Out on a Sunday night from downtown Las Vegas, early into your Monday morning hours. For those of you on the East Coast, as I'm Ben Wilson, back from our Circus Sportsbook studio. Big thanks to Scott Reichel for joining us, talking French Open bets for Monday. I'll get into my best bets Monday card. I have exclusive bets for the round of 16 on the women's side. Also a quarterfinal look ahead for Tuesday. We'll talk about that in 15 minutes. Jonathan Davis, our great colleague, covers all things NHL for the network, VSiN.com. JD going to join us in a half hour to break down his thoughts on the Stanley Cup final. Gets underway on Tuesday between the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers still to come as well. Our look ahead at the Monday MLB schedule. We'll do that to wrap up the show. We'll check back in with Nick Whalen. If you missed that conversation, we'll replay it. NBA Finals breakdown for the Thunder and the Pacers, which starts Wednesday. Final update segment for us here before we hit the top of the hour. This is amazing. Arkansas Little Rock, 4 runs in the bottom of the 8th. Little Rock continues to tack on. And they, again, this was a 4 seed who, not only were they a 4 seed, they were 100-1 to win the region. So by comparison, what were some of the other 4 seeds priced? USC Upstate, South Carolina Upstate, was 12-1 in the Clemson region. The 1-4 seed that besides Little Rock is still alive, Murray State, the Racers were 30-1. And the Trojans, I can call them the Spartans earlier. That's how little is known about Arkansas Little Rock. The Trojans, Chris Beard, by the way, former basketball coach at Arkansas Little Rock, had a big comeback and a big choke by Purdue about 8 years ago in the NCAA tournament. That's the only other time anybody was even thinking Arkansas Little Rock was on the basketball court. We're going to the 9th. Little Rock 3 outs away from pulling off a stunner, 18-1 at one book. Market consensus was 15-1. And Little Rock against the now tournament favorite LSU Tigers going to force a winner-take-all game 7 tomorrow night in Baton Rouge. The fans stunned down there in the Bayou. So 3 outs to go. We assume, though, that will be a win. Would add on, would be the 5th winner-take-all game. Looks like we'll have, one more as well. As Oregon State, they're the number 1 seed in the Corvallis region, taking on the 3 seed USC Trojans. Trojans 8-1 to win that regional. One of the longest shots of the teams that were 2-0 and just needed to win one game in 2 tries. Looks like it'll take a winner-take-all game tomorrow. USC down big, 6-1 right now in the 5th inning. This is a regional where, just updating the odds screen here, Oregon State entering play was minus 150. They lost their first game, though, in stunning fashion. That was a first-round loss to St. Mary's, the Gales out of the WCC. It's so hard to go down that loser's bracket path. Historically, 93% of NCAA regional champions won their first game. 81% started 2-0. So it's hard enough if you go 1-1 and you got to run the table from that loser's side of the bracket. If you go 0-1 and you have to win 4 straight, even as the number 1 seed, that's incredibly difficult. And at the same time, Oregon State, who was the number 8 ranked team in the country trying to do just that, looks like they will punch their ticket to at least a winner-take-all game. USC going to have to wait one more, as they've, similar to Miami, USC way down for a few years in the past. They didn't even have a home ballpark right now. It's undergoing renovations. Andy Stankiewicz done an outstanding job. Coach Stank coming into USC is their new head coach now in his second year. Trojans likely going to need to go to Monday, though, for a chance to advance to the super regional round. On the other hand, we have 2 games that are turning into blowouts. Looks like Arizona under Chip Hale, who have made the regionals all 3 years of Chip Hale's tenure, who's the former Arizona Diamondbacks manager. Arizona has never gotten out of regionals. This is a big step for a Wildcats team, taking advantage of a completely carnage-filled region. Wildcats up 12-0 in the 8th on Cal Poly, the number 3 seed in this region. Arizona's the 2 seed. Could have got the Wildcats at plus 350. Oregon goes 2-out. They lose to Utah Valley, champions of the WAC. But this was really a gift of a regional here for Arizona. Not only do they not even have to face Oregon, the number 1 seed, Cal Poly goes 11 innings the previous game against Utah Valley. Had to expend everything just to get to this game that was played earlier today, that win over Utah Valley, and Arizona taking them to the woodshed. So congrats to Chip Hale's Wildcats. They'll advance plus 350. Our underdog pick, it's not looking good right now. UC Irvine, the Anteaters, down 8-2 after 4 to the Bruins of UCLA. So looks like UCLA, who of the 16 number 1 seeds, there were only 3 number 1 seeds that were plus money. Southern Miss was even money. UCLA plus 105. Coastal Carolina, the only number 1 seed not favored at plus 130. They went out and actually won their regional in pretty dominant fashion, as Florida was the favorite there. But UCLA going to go likely 3-0 and punch their ticket as well. So a really good showing for the Bruins, who had to navigate a tough, tough region with UC Irvine, a resurgent Arizona State team who under Willie Bloomquist finally found their sea legs in their first year in the Big 12, but looked really good. late in the year, getting a number three seed, and started the tournament well. They actually had first knocked off UC Irvine to start the tournament. We're in a great position, but job well done so far by UCLA. Look, never say never because it's college baseball, but top of the fifth there. UCLA up 8-2. Irvine 11-1 to come back, so not looking good for them right now. And Arkansas Little Rock goes to the top of the ninth. Three outs away, Malcolm Brown out of the pen, 4 1/3 in relief, looking to close the door for the Trojans of Little Rock. They join Murray State as your 2-4 seeds to go into winner-take-all game sevens in the regionals tomorrow. Run through what the Monday card looks like. Again, we don't have odds out yet, which is a shame. We're hoping to get these soon, but Tennessee and Wake Forest get a rematch. Wake Forest stuns Tennessee earlier 7-6. The Volunteers, who were the number one team in the preseason, defending champs under head coach Tony Vitello, took some lumps in SEC play, still, though, a very good team who really wasn't tested in the non-con, which you can attribute some of those struggles in SEC play to. Tennessee, though, a big favorites. They were -250 to win the regional. The number two seed Demon Deacons of Wake Forest lost their first game. Since then, though, Wake has been great. After losing to Cincinnati, three straight wins for the Deacs. They were in this particular regional 3-1 as the second choice. They'll have a rematch tomorrow. Look, if you've lost your first game, though, we've seen historical precedent. It's so hard to win four straight simply because of the arms it takes, the lack of depth that even the best teams winning four straight games, and you utilize your best pitchers, I don't care if you're the best team in the country, it's going to be really hard to find arms you trust that are reliable and can give you quality innings out of the bullpen. That's the big challenge for Wake. I imagine Tennessee will be a pretty healthy size favorite coming into the game on Monday. I will pull up what they were today in that loss where you could have cashed a pretty big underdog price there with Wake Forest as the Demon Deacons do get home. And again, that game in Knoxville, so a lot to ask. That was priced here as I'm just updating my my odd screen. That was -290, a +235 cash for Wake. I expect that line to be maybe -300, slightly greater there on Tennessee. Wouldn't hate a run line play laying the runs there with the Volunteers. North Carolina, Oklahoma. Stay away for me. UNC, the number one seed. They lose to Oklahoma today, who is 4-1 to win the region. UNC, I should say, pretty big favorite at -330. 9-5 win for the Sooners. Sooners have gone win-loss win here. So Sooners in a better position than some of these other teams who try to win four straight after a first-round loss. I love the depth North Carolina has pitching-wise, but I have so much respect. I've covered a lot of Oklahoma teams over the years. Skip Johnson is as respected as it gets as any manager in college baseball. That's one I'll stay away from, even though UNC I'm certainly going to be favored in that particular matchup. Again, on pulling up the odds for today, UNC was -260, so you expect them to be in a similar ballpark there tomorrow. Other two, and this is where it gets wonky. Southern Miss, the one seed, they're trying to win four straight against the three seed Miami, Florida. Southern Miss, even money. It's another stay away for me. The one I'm going to look at, though, Ole Miss, the one seed rematch, third game against Murray State. Ole Miss pounded Murray State today 19-8. Ole Miss -105 to win the region. Murray State 30-1 as your four seed. But look, that game got out of hand so early that Murray State could kind of just punt on it, knowing they could save some of their needed arms for the big game that decides it all on Monday. The game today, from Ole Miss's perspective and where the odds were out, the Rebels were in a situation where they were a -275 favorite. There was actually a lot of dog money that came in on Murray State. But now that Ole Miss has won, I expect this to be a huge number. I'm talking probably -350 or greater. I would love to get a run line situation here on Murray State. We'll just pull it up to see what it was today. But if I can get Murray State catching, several runs and they were +3.5 today, I bet it might be 4.5 tomorrow. I would love a run line situation for Murray State with Ole Miss having to win four straight games in that particular region. That's a look at what to expect for Monday in the college baseball. Quick reminder before we hit a break, final jewel of the Triple Crown coming up, the Belmont Stakes, and there's no better time to bet the races than with our friends over at First Bet. Right now, get a $200 sign-up bonus when you use our promo code VSIN200. If you go to firstbet.com/VSIN, promo code VSIN200 today. In our final hour, we'll break down my favorite French Open plays for Monday, talk to Jonathan Davis on the Stanley Cup Final, and break down the MLB card for tomorrow, all right here on Cashing Out.